It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. With a growing number of people living with dementia, we learn about a care model that is spawned from the Hoekhove village in the Netherlands and how this community, thousands of miles from Wisconsin, has a novel approach to care and support for people whose loss of memory, language, and other thinking skills interferes with daily life. You can call in along the way. Add your question or comment at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Eloy Von Hall has managed nursing homes and assisted living facilities for more than 20 years. One of the founders of the Hoekhove. Eloy, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you, Kate. It's a pleasure to be on your radio.
Thank you. Good morning. And we have Dr. Nathaniel Chin, who is a geriatrician, a memory clinic doctor, and a medical director of the Wisconsin Alzheimer's Disease Research Center. Dr. Chin, welcome.
Thank you for having me, Kate.
Dr. Chin, the World Health Organization expecting the number of people suffering from dementia to grow from 55 million this year to 78 million by 2030. Is our society ready to deal with the growth of this illness?
A complicated question, Kate, and I guess the short answer would be no, we are not ready. I think we are making great progress and we are trying the best we can, but I would say more is going to be needed.
Why is there such a growing increase year to year now?
Well, we're doing a wonderful job when it comes to addressing vascular risk factors, blood pressure, cholesterol, blood sugar, weight, and how it impacts not only our heart, but our brain. But we also know that there are other important factors, social determinants of health, access to education and care, and people are getting older, Kate. We can't stop the aging effect, and age is the greatest risk factor when it comes to thinking changes. The baby boomers are a large group of individuals, and they're turning 65 and older at this point. And so we're just seeing a large number of people getting older who are inevitably having some changes, but we're also just seeing other factors that are also leading to increased numbers.
Eloy, how is the Netherlands handling the growth of people living with dementia?
Also a complicated question, I think, but we have the same problems, you could say, in society as in almost all countries. And you have to find several solutions for the growing population living with dementia. We concluded, and our minister lately, that we cannot continue with building nursing homes, skilled nursing homes for people with advanced dementia. So the policy is already for some years that we have to stay at home as long as possible and organize the care and support at home. And because it's our financial resources are limited, but also we cannot staff all kind of nursing homes, skilled nursing homes like the Hoekhove in the future. So it's a multis. People must stay at home. We expect that family caregivers do even more. We organize nursing home care at home, and we try to give the best care when you really cannot stay at home in our skilled nursing homes and assisted living facilities.
So we call it here aging in place, care in the home. Eloy, you have worked in this area, management of nursing facilities, for more than two decades. What troubles you about the way people with dementia are cared for?
My biggest trouble is that we don't look at people living with dementia as people. People with all kinds of aspirations, abilities, possibilities. So we talk too quickly about patients, demented people, and we forget that people with dementia are people who can do a lot and are still able to do a lot. They are human beings who want to live.
Dr. Chin, I want to jump in here and just get your reaction, Dr. Chin, on what Eloy is saying here, that these are people who can still do a lot.
Well, Kate, I completely agree with Eloy that there's a stigma and an unfortunate interaction that can occur with people living with dementia or thinking changes. And sometimes we forget that these are people with their personalities, their life experiences, their hopes and dreams. And we start treating them more like patients and less like people. And that can come out in various settings, including nursing homes. I would add to Eloy's answer that one of the unfortunate things is that we don't have the support and infrastructure within our care facilities. We need more training, we need more people, and we need more opportunities to provide the care that people need and the families are hoping for in places outside of the home.
Talking about dementia care with Dr. Nate Chin, Medical Director of the Wisconsin Alzheimer's Disease Research Center, and Eloy Van Hall, who's one of the founders of the Hoekvik in the Netherlands. Eloy, take us inside this dementia village. And now it's going on almost 15 years. What is life like in this facility?
Yes, if I look outside right now, because I'm sitting there and I look outside, I see now a family, young children passing the theater square while two residents are having a chat. I see the fountain, I see many other people sitting, some at a restaurant drinking drinks, playing cards or a game. And other people are just walking around. It looks like a normal Dutch urban neighborhood with a boulevard, big trees, houses, a cafe. Just, it looks like a normal neighborhood where people, and I can't see Emily that they are, that many have advanced dementia, but there are people just gathering at this theater square, which is one of the squares we have in the Hoekvik.
And what makes it different, though, from a neighborhood for these residents? And where are they able to go in the Hoekvik?
So I think your question could be what makes it different from skilled nursing homes, because the Hoekvik, and that's not always understood in the world, is officially licensed as a skilled nursing facility. So all the people that are living in the Hoekvik need skilled nursing, long-term care. And so they are living with advanced dementia and have also other health issues. And so it looks like a normal neighborhood, Dutch neighborhood, but it is in fact skilled nursing what we deliver in a such a normal way that when you don't know, you just walk in a neighborhood where you see people and meet people. Maybe a little bit more in a wheelchair because some people, 40% is in a wheelchair, but you see just people and chatting and socializing and walking around.
Dr. Chin, what are your thoughts on the village approach to care that you see in the Hoekvik?
Well, I think it's very inspiring. The principle of humanizing care, of really including the person living with dementia in their actual day-to-day activities, I think is something we should all be striving for. The idea of creating an environment where you don't know that you are in a skilled nursing facility is wonderful. I'm not entirely clear that that is something that is feasible in our current infrastructure and our current funding of these care facilities, but I certainly believe there's lots to learn from this type of model and that we can still include, even in our current skilled facilities, many of the principles, many of the approaches that are happening at this wonderful dementia village.
So when you say our, you're talking about here in the U.S., it would perhaps be difficult to build a dementia village that is modeled like the Hoekvik. Why is that?
Well, and I can't speak for every part of our great country, but I would say, you know, space is always something that we think about. Just where would you be able to create this sort of structure? Mm-hmm. You would want to do this intentionally. So you would not want to, I mean, you would have to find the right area to build this. You would need to have the funding for that. You would need to have the staff. And Eloy even mentioned this. You would need to have the trained staff to be able to work in such a wonderful environment, but enough so that you actually have adequate care being provided and support. And so I just, in our current, the current way that we do things, care is so expensive in the United States, and care facilities are working on razor-thin margins, even though it is really expensive for patients or for people and their families. And so to create this model, which I think is a wonderful model, I think it would take a lot. It would take a very strong social movement towards this.
Clinical geriatrician Nate Shin hosts the Dementia Matters podcast. Eloy Van Hall is co-founder of a care facility in the Netherlands that allows people with dementia to live in a village setting. And you can be part of this conversation on care and support. Call with a question or comment at 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Wisconsin has nearly 200,000 caregivers of people living with dementia, according to the state health department, and they provide hundreds of millions of hours of unpaid care every year. We explore the dementia village care model from the Netherlands, and you can be part of this discussion about memory care. Call in with a question, share experiences, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Eloy Van Hall is in the Netherlands, co-founder of a dementia village model. And Dr. Nate Shin is on the geriatrics faculty at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Eloy, there are stores and restaurants. You mentioned a theater in the Húsavík. How do people living there pay for or use these facilities?
If you look at the principles of and our vision, how we started this whole concept, it's about a normal life for people living with advanced dementia. So we built a house, group homes. We have houses where people live, and you need a meal daily and a breakfast. And so the people and who are living in the community in those houses are in other long-term care facilities in the US called patients. They are living in a house together with six other people, and there is staff around, and together they form a sort of a household. And what's more normal than going on a walk in the neighborhood and go to the supermarket for groceries? Because in every house, and there are 27 houses in the Hoogeweg, they prepare dinner, but also lunch and breakfast. In those 27 houses, there is, of course, a kitchen where you prepare meals. And I say, of course, because in long-term care, you don't have a kitchen often in your at your ward. And so they cook their own meals. So in the evening, we have 27 different dinners prepared in those 27 houses. And it's nice to go on a walk to the supermarket to buy the groceries. And of course, residents who are living in the Hoogeweg, they cannot stay at home. Otherwise, they would stay at home, as I told you, that's the policy. But being part of that, going outside on a walk, meeting other people on the street, complaining about the weather or enjoying the weather, and also buying the groceries in the supermarket is a normal thing people like to do. And so they are outside, they are active, they are socializing, they are just doing something what they like to do. And at the same time, they prepare and help and are able to be involved in the meal preparation. Just a normal life for people who cannot stay at home because they are living in this skilled nursing home, the Hoogeweg. But they are able to do this. Some people are able to do this. Some people like to do this. So we create all kinds of opportunities for the 188 individuals that are living in the Hoogeweg to be themselves, to do the things they still want to do and are still able to do. So you need these kind of amenities, a supermarket, a restaurant, so people can leave their house, can walk through the Hoogeweg, can go to the restaurant and drink a glass of wine at 5 p.m. because that's what they did always, and go back home again. Some need more support and guidance than others, but they all are living with advanced dementia, and still they can use the whole neighborhood and many on their own, and some with guidance. So you need all these amenities to create a normal life. And that normal life, for example, the meal preparation, is taken away in long-term care facilities because somebody else, a cook, is cooking all those meals in the kitchen. So residents are not involved anymore. Now they can be involved, and some are involved. And not only the meal preparation, but also in setting the table and sitting around a normal table, family-style dining. And so you can influence how people live, act, behave a lot by bringing back normal life.
Dr. Chin, as you hear Eloy present this lifestyle approach for people with dementia, what immediate improvements could nursing homes here in the U.S. make to improve care?
I think it would be approach to the person who's living in the care facility, because as Eloy mentioned, this is still a nursing home, a skilled nursing home at least, and how we engage with people can really set the tone for a person's day and for their orientation to where they are. And I think Eloy brings up a really good point about food. You know, food's really important to people. And we often, when we institutionalize someone, we are making the food and healthcare and then having people come at certain times and give them the food.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is something, if we could be more flexible, if we could create a system where people get to choose, perhaps participate if they can or want to, and have them eat the foods that they want to at the times that they want to. These are things that still could be done in the current system if we invest in the staffing and the time and the training and the space to do that. And so that even in the current infrastructure, some of these things are possible. But the idea of going to a grocery store is just lovely. And this idea of being able to be a part of your community in this open space is something that's wonderful, and our current system would not be feasible, but some of those things could still be adapted.
We're talking about the world's first dementia village and how care could be improved for people living with dementia here in the U.S. And we have Dr. Nate Chin there, the medical director of the Wisconsin Alzheimer's Disease Research Center, and Eloy Van Hall, one of the founders of the Hoekhuizen in the Netherlands. Eloy, can you explain how residents receive medical care or are given their medications in the village?
Yes, good question. And I'm happy that you asked that question, because the people in the Hoekhuizen need medication. Average, when people move in, they get 8 different type of medications. It's part of our policy to review the medication you use and also the treatment you get. Because in this phase of your life, it's very important to focus on quality of life and not, according to our vision, not only on the quality of care. So we see that while people live in the Hoekhuizen, we can reduce the medication and also some treatments, because the focus is more on quality of care. So many residents still use medication. We work together with a pharmacy who delivers the medication 3 times per week in Baxter. It's pre-packed. And that medication goes to every home where there's a trolley where it's kept inside. And the care worker who works in the house gives the medication, makes sure the medication is given on time. So there are care workers in the house who give the medication and also who guide the whole household and who cook and who support the residents and care for them if needed.
Typically, when you say 188 residents, how many people are employed by the Hoekhuizen?
Around 270 people.
And then,
well, in the Netherlands, many work in part-time, so it's not all full-time jobs.
What would be a typical staffing ratio for the people living in the village?
If you count all the people that work in the care part, so there are also service managers and you have a ratio of 0.87 care worker for one resident each. So that's the full-time equivalent, 0.87. So not one-to-one, but almost
very
one-to-one.
Very close. Yeah. Dr. Chin, what do you make of that ratio?
Sounds wonderful to have a close to one-to-one ratio. Mm. That alone would lead to improved care and quality of life for any individual. And we don't have that in the United States. We don't have that in our current system. And I think that speaks to this need, but also that it would be an investment into people, caring for people. And so our staff, our trained professionals, we need more of them. We need them to feel confident in engaging properly and respectfully with people with thinking changes and how to handle potential mood and behavioral changes that may occur, especially in this population of more severe stage dementia.
I'm
And
going
so
to
the closer we can
pause.
get to one-to-one is the best.
Memory clinic physician Nathaniel Chin, medical director of the Wisconsin Alzheimer's Disease Research Center, Eloy Van Hall in the Netherlands. You can join in 800-642-1234. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We explore ways to care for people living with dementia and a village model where residents with cognitive decline can move around in a neighborhood setting. Call in with a question or a comment, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. We have Dr. Nate Chin here, a clinical geriatrician and on the faculty of UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Eloy Van Hall is one of the founders of what's considered the world's first dementia village, the Hoekhuvik. Eloy, here in the U.S., police authorities issue what are called silver alerts when someone with dementia goes missing. How does the Hoekhuvik keep its residents safe?
That's an interesting question because the Hoekhuvik is built a long time ago. And at that moment, we were required to close the Hoekhuvik from community. So inside the Hoekhuvik, and that's 15,000 square meters, 3.5 acres, there's freedom, space, gardens to walk around. So inside, residents can walk around. But since 2 years, there's a new law in place in the Netherlands that say you cannot lock in people living with advanced dementia. Unless there are really reasons not to. So we are at this moment learning to open the Hoekhuvik even more for people living with dementia, for the people who are living inside. Not only we, care workers, family, but also society and the police officers must learn how to communicate, how to work and how to meet people with dementia and advanced dementia in the community. So we have to learn, everybody has to learn and understand that people with dementia, you can meet them on the streets and what to do and don't panic and observe and figure out how you can help and communicate with them. So the Hoekhuvik is now safe because there's a sort of a reception area where you have to walk through to go inside the Hoekhuvik. And so you go inside and you're immediately outside. But that door will be opened more and more for the residents who are living inside. So if they want to leave, they can leave. And that's exciting. I think it's exciting, but it's also scary for everybody and for family because we tend to say we have to keep the people safe. And that's why we created in the past skilled nursing homes and memory wards where we lock in people. But that lock is for many people a very negative trigger, and people are not happy to be locked in or jailed sometimes. Is that. So we have to learn, we all, society, family, care workers, care providers, to open the doors for people with dementia, also in skilled nursing homes.
Dr. Chin.
So that's the next step.
That's okay, Eloy. Dr. Chin, are people in the U.S. too preoccupied with keeping dementia patients safe at the expense of quality of life by keeping doors locked or more secured?
It's always a challenge to find the right balance between safety and autonomy. And I would first say that not every person in a skilled nursing facility is in a locked unit. Mm-hmm. Certain units in nursing homes do have locked doors to prevent wandering. And that is, you're right, for safety reasons. Now, of course, if we had a one-to-one ratio of staff to people living with dementia, we may not need that locked door, but it is in place for safety. And I do agree to your question that we have to find that balance between allowing people to be people and to go and walk and enjoy the outside, and also, of course, then our fear of wandering into an environment that they don't know and perhaps getting into an accident. And I don't have the answer to that, but I certainly believe there are people looking into, even in our current system, how do we avoid having locked units within skilled nursing facilities?
Eloy, you
Kate,
mentioned, yes, go ahead.
may I add something and also clarify? If I say our ratio is almost 1 to 1, that doesn't mean that there's always one care worker available for a resident, because in a house, there's one care worker for 7 residents. But in total, we have so many staffs that if you count that to the one number of residents we have, then I come to 1 to 1 ratio. But in daily practice, there's not one care worker available for every resident.
That makes
And
sense.
secondly, talking safety and risks is always the discussions in all the study programs I provide right now, because at this moment I am an advisor and I welcome many Americans, by the way, and we discuss safety and risks. And also simple things like allowing a resident just to walk outside in this safe neighborhood. I see in many long-term facilities worldwide, that is already seen as a huge risk. A resident walking alone on a normal on normal street pavement with a fountain there, etc., and they can go wherever they want, and we don't trace them via GPS. So this principle already is something we learned, or we see in the whole, like, that residents are able to do that in the neighborhood. That's always bigger than our visitors expect from the videos that are available online. So also this little aspect of allowing a person just to walk around in a neighborhood is already a sort of a seen as risky by many other providers and people. And we show that residents with advanced dementia want to do that and can do that.
As you balance safety and risks and that quality of life in the neighborhood setting, you mentioned this village has been around for some time now. Have there been changes or improvements made to the village since it opened nearly 15 years ago?
Now, the improvement will be, in my opinion, and we are almost ready for that step, to open the Hogeweg also for residents to leave on their own. The Hogeweg grew in the 15 years and became more and more a social community. It's open for everybody who's living around us, except for professionals, by the way. They have to make an appointment for a guided visit and study tour. But we see yesterday a firm, Denso, they make car parts for Mercedes and Toyota. They use our theater. They came with 80 people in the theater, and afterwards they were drinking beer and wine in our restaurant. So they are part of the whole community. Saturday, there's a market in the Hogeweg, a mar supermarket for all neighbors and the local town. So we have many booths and everybody's here. So it's really part of the society, the local society, the town base. And that's what you saw in the last 15 years. It became more and more normal and part of the whole town. So you could say we society learned a lot just to live together with people with dementia already, although the Hogeweg is still a little bit a unique part of this town base where it's located.
Eloy van Hal, one of the founders of the Hoekevik in the Netherlands, and Dr. Nate Shin is here, medical director of the Wisconsin Alzheimer's Disease Research Center. As we talk about the dementia village and how to care can be improved for people living with dementia. And you can join the conversation at any point. Call in with a question at 800-642-1234. Dr. Chin, are there innovative models for dementia care that are underway here or being experimented with in the U.S.?
Well, in Wisconsin, we have a wonderful program called a dementia-friendly community. And this speaks to some of the principles that Eloy is talking about now. You know, he used the word learn. The society and the community needs to learn how to properly and effectively, respectfully engage with people living with dementia. And in Wisconsin, our aging and disability resource centers have dementia specialists. These are social workers, nurses, people living with the experience of caregiving. And they are training certain businesses or community organizations, even hospitals, to have this certification of being dementia friendly. And it speaks to this idea of community, of engagement, of ways of interacting with people living with dementia. And so that is a community care system that I think speaks to what Eloy's speaking to, that is effective. And we see that in Wisconsin. I think there are other things that are being looked at. You know, we know that education and care efficacy in caregivers is really important, but even things like reminiscence therapy, being able to connect with people living with dementia and really tapping into the things that they enjoy and can recall is really powerful, whether that's through looking at photo albums or listening to certain music that is reminiscent, or even engaging with pets. These are things that are being done and are being studied, but we certainly believe that putting the person and their quality of life is going to be the most impactful.
Eloy, people across the world look to you, look to the Hukovik as a model for dementia care. What advice do you give people looking to improve care at their facilities?
We welcome many people. We do a lot of study visits where you experience the Hukovik, and you have to experience the Hukovik to really understand what happens. This morning, I had two Americans here, very experienced, and they were flabbergasted how the residents were living here. So it's very good. And he said, you cannot understand what we do unless you have seen it. My advice is always, and Dr. Chen said that already, learn from the principles, and you can start tomorrow with little changes already. So you can change the existing care if you are willing. If you develop your own clear vision in what you want to achieve, you can start tomorrow. It's not the bricks and the mortar. It's the way you look at people living with dementia and their abilities and their autonomy and independency. So everybody can start tomorrow. And building only dementia villages is absolutely not the solution for our aging population. But start tomorrow and think about what you want, you as a manager, you as a family member, you as a care worker, what you want for yourself. Are you happy in the place where you work? Then it's okay, but most people want change. Start tomorrow.
Eloy van Hall helped found an innovative facility in the Netherlands, a dementia village. We have Dr. Nate Chin here as well, medical director of the Wisconsin Alzheimer's Disease Research Center. Call in with a question, share thoughts as we examine the evolution of dementia care living options. 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We discuss a village caregiving model for people living with dementia. In Wisconsin, a memory care cafe recently reopened in Rhinelander. It's a social gathering program for people experiencing early stage dementia and their loved ones. Call in with a question or comment about memory care, 800-642-1234. Eloy van Hall is in the Netherlands with experiences in creating a dementia village setting. And Dr. Nate Chin is here, memory clinic physician. Let's go to Karin in Madison. Karin, hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm just excited to hear this conversation today. I have been living with dementia patients in my home for the past 20 years. I'm a nurse. And about 11 years ago, I started a nonprofit called Hope and the Future. It's in Madison on South High Point Road. And we are taking an intergenerational approach to, you know, a kind of community way of living. So we have some of our staff and their kids living on site with dementia patients, and it's a small group of patients, so that we do what we call a family of friends model. And we have a lot of volunteers coming and going, so we really have a beautiful sense of community here. And I've had just an amazing amount of fun bringing people with dementia and children and people of all ages together. And I've watched people really flourish, even in the midst of their dementia, and be able to honestly affect my kids and the people around them in just beautiful ways. So I just wanted people to know we're working on this because we are just beginning to expand what we have here so that we have healthy seniors and families eventually living on site, and then daycare programs for infants all the way through older adults.
Karen, how do you look to scale this group home? What is your vision for the future?
My vision for the future with this is really replication. Having smaller settings where people can really get to know the history of a person and their family, what it is they've been interested in, and then try to replicate or adapt things that they're interested in so they can continue to do things that are exciting for them throughout life. So it's not to make a great big facility, but to replicate. I think it was a lot of years ago. I was able to get group homes approved in the state of Wisconsin for advanced age. I had the first one in Middleton at the time, and there are now over 1,000 group homes that are doing care for folks of advanced age and dementia. Mm. And those folks during the pandemic in particular were followed. They stayed healthier, they were happier and more engaged because they're actually living with a family in most cases. Some of these are staffed and they run into some of the same problems that you see in institutional care where the caregivers are constantly different people and they never really get to, you know, have a safe sense of, I don't know your name, but I know you're familiar and I'm feel safe and happy with you.
But the social connections have been there that you see are so pertinent. I want to have Eloy respond to what you've been describing, Karen. Eloy, what do you make of this story?
I think it's a beautiful project or example. And a lot what you say, Karen, is very important. Also in the model of the Hope, right? You need to know the person in front of you. You need to know the life story. Otherwise, you cannot support the person living with dementia. And I think that we need to develop all kind of solutions, the intergenerational solutions. I would love to have younger people also living in the next new Hoogwijk 2 or 3.0. So all these elements Karen is telling are essential for people living with dementia. So it's very good that these projects already exist and that we develop more of these kind of examples and replicate it.
Dr. Chin, would you like to jump in here?
I just want to say, Karen, thank you for the great work you're doing and for your compassion and energy. This idea of intergenerational, of community building, of bringing families together is just wonderful. And I think the creativity of people continues to inspire me. And it's going to be people like Karen that are going to make a huge impact on the field.
I totally agree.
Let's take another call. And this is Karen in Watertown. Karen, go ahead.
Hi. My question has more to do with the research and what was the experience that I had with my mother. We had with my mother, she wanted to get out no matter where she was. She lived her life as in that period of time trying to find any little hole in anywhere that she lived. And we never understood why. Why did she want to leave? Once she did get out, she got all the way over to a highway. There was a door that was left open, a gate, actually. And she spied it, and she went, because they looked at the tape later on to figure it out and fix it. I'm interested for my own self in fear for this particular problem and knowing why, the knowing the why of it, so that it can be handled better.
Karen, thank you. Dr. Chin, can you help explain this behavior?
I unfortunately missed part of the beginning due to the connectivity, but I would say, you know, each individual is unique, and we bring to this condition our own behaviors and personalities to it. And so as the brain is changing, a person is going to respond differently. Wandering does tend to happen as the disease progresses in some people. And it is really important to understand the person and what motivates them and what they're looking for. Some people simply like to walk. Some people are interested by changes in their environment. And it's really important to get a sense of who a person has been in their prior life, who they are now, and what motivates them. And it is a balance between, you know, having people enjoy their day as well as making sure that we are doing what we can to prevent something that could be more catastrophic.
Eloy, have you run into this where a resident just wants to get out or leave and has to have a more close watch of them?
With 188 residents, the majority is happy in the neighborhood, but mm-hmm. some people want to know what's behind the door. So often when you give them the possibility to look what's there, nothing happens. So that's why I also say we have to open the doors and allow people just to look around and to see what they want to do. And most of the people with dementia will not run away or jump into the kennels we have in the Netherlands or step on a bike. No, they just want to, they are curious. They want to know. And I am curious because I didn't understood from Karen where her mother once wanted to run away from. Where was she, what was she leaving? What place? Was that place a nice place for her? Or was it a place where I would like to run away from as well? If I'm kept into a locked in, I want to escape and run away, which is just normal behavior. So I'm curious, and we cannot discuss this case because we don't know
sure,
enough.
But there needs to be more investigation yeah. as to what yeah. is really the root cause. And I want to thank yeah. both of you for joining us. Eloy, thank you. Dr. Chin, thank you as well.
You're welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Eloy Van Hall, one of the founders of the Hoekevik, a care facility in the Netherlands, a village setting. Dr. Chin, Nate Chin, geriatrician, UW School of Medicine and Public Health. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.